Welcome to the OCR A-Level Psychology Podcast. Find out more at www.ocr.org.uk.
My name's Rebecca Rhodes, and yes, I am not from here. So you're going to have to try to understand what I'm saying half the time as well. And I try not to swear when I get overly excited, sort of bad things come out. But I'm from New Zealand originally. And I've been in England now for this is my fourth year teaching psychology in New Zealand. I taught geography, ironically, and we don't teach psychology in New Zealand, so it's sort of disappointing, and that's why I'm still here. I'm waiting for New Zealand to catch up. But I'm here today to give you a bit of an idea about what it's like to teach the core studies. So at Farnborough Sixth Form College, we use OCR, and we've decided to stick with OCR, and I'm going to sort of explain to you why we've made that decision. So let me sort of, I'm going to fall over, I'm going to trip over this damn cord as well. Just to put it into a bit of perspective for you where I work, Farnborough is not so far away from here, much closer than the train journey to Leeds, but we offer GCSE, AS and A2 psychology to just over 1,000 students. So that's almost one in three students at our college take psychology. So it's hugely popular. And, that's so much better. Sorry. Oh, my God. Teaching in a classroom is so much easier. Okay, so just to give you an idea of numbers, I'm responsible for AS psychology, and we've got 27 classes, over 500, almost 550 students. It's huge. We have 17 fantastic staff, two of whom are here today, so it's nice to see friendly faces. And at A2, we have 430 students and 22 classes. At A2, we offer health psychology, crime psychology, and environmental psychology. But environmental's going, which I have to plug. Come back, environmental psychology. But that's just to give you an idea. And the type of students we have range in ability. We're not selective. We just take students. We say to them if they want to take AS psychology, you've got to have 5 C's. Definitely a C in English, Maths and Science, but we can be flexible if they come to us with a D, and then we sort of say, okay, have you got a C or higher in geography or history or something like that? So in some of my AS classes, I have students with an average GCSE of 3.7, but I also have students who have an average GCSE of 8, and so there's no streaming at all. It's just we take whoever wants to do it, and we take most of them because they love psychology. And I do think it's largely because of the core studies. And that's what I'm going to be talking to you about today, specifically the core studies. I'm not going to tell you about A2 psychology with OCR or anything like that. It's purely the core studies. And the first question I want to ask you is, when you go back to work tomorrow, can you put up your hand if you will be teaching the OCR specification? Just because I'm nosy. Okay, so that's most of you. Apologies if I'm going to say things that are already familiar to you. Okay. But hopefully you are just as excited about teaching OCR as I am, so you'll be sort of on the excited journey with me. As a teacher, I've been teaching for about 10 years now. Like I said, only 4 years with psychology. But I thought to myself, what is it that I like about being a teacher? And these were the things that came to mind. And then I thought, okay, what are the things that OCR offers that compensates for all these things that I like doing as a teacher? And OCR, I think, ticks all those boxes. There's a variety which comes through with the 15 core studies that are going to be coming in next year. It allows you to teach in a structured manner so that students of varying ability can sort of go along on the journey with you. And most of all, and best of all, I think, is the fact that you can be exceedingly creative with how you present each of these core studies. There's always going to be something new in a week's time. The way you present it can completely change. You get input from the students when they bring their own experiences, and that's what I think makes teaching psychology exciting. And as I keep saying, the OCR spec, I think, ticks all those boxes. I've only taught OCR, so I could be completely biased. So I thought I'd ask a colleague of mine from Farnborough Sixth Form who's been teaching for many, many more years than I have, teaching psychology and has had experience with other specifications. And these are her thoughts. And let me have a drink of water.
There's a very clear structure to them. And then move along quite quickly. But within that, they get quite a broad grasp of what psychology is. I also think that for some of the students, we find some of the course studies quite difficult. The fact that they have got other course studies to rely on is very helpful to them, and they feel, okay, I didn't quite get this bit, but it doesn't mean I didn't get everything. They can move on to the next course study in which they can show a great deal of strength. So I think there's a nice balance in terms of depth and breadth in their AAS year, and at the same time it challenges them sufficiently to keep them motivated to want to learn more. And for those who do struggle, at the same time, there's enough to move on to that they don't feel that if they don't succeed in one area, they can't succeed in others. So I think those are the strengths of the OCR spec and the things that I particularly enjoyed doing.
Right, so Vanessa was able to share the fact that she likes... Hang on, I can't do two things at once. That she likes the depth and breadth of the OCR specification, and that's what I like as well. You get the 15 core studies when they come in next year, and they cover these five perspectives. So the students come in and do 1 year of psychology at their AS level, and they're exposed to such a huge variety of what psychology can offer. And I'm just going to quickly run through the study. So, like I said, apologies to most of you who are currently teaching OCR. But we've got, at Farnborough, we start with the social approach, and we think that this is a great way to keep the students invigorated. They're coming into a subject for the first time, and a lot of them are quite anxious, thinking, oh my God, what am I going to learn about? So we start with social, and that gets them excited, because we start with Milgram, and you ask them questions, who do you obey? Who do you regard as an authority figure? Often teachers aren't authority figures anymore, so they don't obey us anymore, but maybe they shouldn't anyway. But then you get them thinking about, well, okay, if you were put in a situation where you could give a complete stranger an electric shock, would you do that? And they often say, well, no, that's totally they wouldn't say unethical, it's not nice, they say to start with. And then as the year progresses, they start using the nice lingo. But they don't agree with the concept of causing complete stranger pain. But then you expose them to the study by Milgram, and they go, oh my goodness, people do these things. But obviously you then start critiquing the study. Now we've got a second study, and this is a new one, and you're going to love the talk by Rajana Haslam later on today, looking at the BBC Prison Project study. So I'm not going to actually talk to you anything about that. But one thing I do like about the fact that it's been introduced, I'm talking really fast, aren't I? Is the fact that it's a British study. And yes, okay, I'm a foreigner saying that, but often my students, when they get to the end of the year, they say, how come most of the studies we learn about are from America? And so I think it's really good that this new study and a few of the other ones that have come in are actually from this country. And then obviously there's a great study by Pilly Evan looking at helping behaviour. And you'll see in a video shortly of some of my students, they actually had a teacher walk into the classroom and collapse on the floor to see if anybody would help them. They didn't. But that's how you can bring the studies alive. Freud, they either like him or they hate him. But you get to introduce the concepts of the psychodynamic approach by talking about little Hans. And that's what I like about OCR, is the fact that you can introduce a study, they've got something to hold on to. It's something that's not abstract, it's concrete for them. And then you can introduce these difficult theories that otherwise they might never understand, but you put it in a context with the study and they actually go, okay, now I sort of get what's going on. And you can do that with Bandura and behaviorism as well. You can bring in operant and classical conditioning after they sort of get an idea about what Bandura was trying to get at. And then we have the Samuel and Bryant study looking at conservation. I love saying to them, put up your hands if you have access to a 4 to 8 year old child. And they all think, okay, access sounds a little bit dodgy. But they sort of put up their hands and I said, right, you could go home and try this. You could actually replicate this study at home. And that's something they actually get quite excited about because it means that they can actually have hands-on experience and they can do a bit of role play at home. Hopefully not torturing their younger brother or sister though. Rosenhan tends to be one of the favorite studies of my students. They also like Thigpen and Cleckley looking at Three Faces of Eve. We showed them the Hollywood movie. I can't remember the main actress, but I think she got an Oscar for it, didn't she? And that gives them a sense of that you can actually take psychology and plonk it into the real world, so it's not a subject that is out of reach for them. And then obviously Griffith's study, which is up there, wonderful speech. I love the fact that you helped us as teachers understand the procedure and the results and the applications. It was superb. And so, and once again, that's another study from this country. So I think that's always a good thing. We'll never get one from New Zealand, though. And then the cognitive, Bob Washo, hello, Kanzi. Okay, so we've got still a primate study in there looking at sign language. We've got the new study by Baron Cohen now looking at how autistic and Asperger's students, adults I should say, interpret emotions through thoughts through eyes. It shouldn't be thoughts, it's emotions. And then we have the Loftus and Palmer study still there, but it's always great because the students don't actually appreciate the fact that memory isn't like a computer program where you input information, you store it, and then you just get it back whenever you need it. And they realize that it can be easily distorted. We at Farnborough finish off with the physiological studies. Demin and Kleitman, they think it's a bit quirky because who would have thought there could be a correlation between eye movement and dream content? And they actually think that's quite cool. And then another British study, the new one by Maguire, looking at how the hippocampus can change if you're using your cognitive map over and over again, and London taxi drivers were used as a sample. Now, I believe that when we teach the study, in about 20, 30 years' time, when our students have actually learnt about it, they're going to come to London, sit in one of these black cabs, and they're going to think to themselves, this guy's brain is different. Okay, and I definitely think that they're going to take that away with them. And then Sperry, which is my personal favourite study to teach, and I know for teachers and students alike, it can be quite a daunting study because it's quite complex. And so I thought what I might do is give you an example of how I teach Sperry shortly. But just to, I thought I'd ask my students to comment on why they like doing AS psychology, so these are their thoughts.
You know how each study is so different from the last one or the next one?
Within the same topic.
Yeah, or even, and from topic to topic, if you find something really boring or really difficult, you know that because there's so much variety and they're so different, it's not all going to be like that.
Yeah.
So you're not going to sort of fail everything. Not everything's going to be so hard and so boring. Some things you'll find really interesting, some things you won't.
When teachers get involved as well, one lesson, one of our teachers came in and just collapsed on the floor to see if we'd help him.
Because you know how with each study you've got to learn like the IV, the DE, alternatives, big issues and stuff. That helps because after you've done a few studies looking for ethics or validity,
you
have to learn for everyone. You know how to look for them as well.
Exactly.
So it gets easier and you understand.
It becomes natural to identify, oh, that goes with this, this is high in validity, and then you sort of, for each topic that comes, you sort of, the first one you sort of learn everything and then it just grows and your skills grow as well. Yeah. So by A2, you're basically completely natural in everything you're trying to look for.
Mm-hmm.
I like raising hands. I really like raising hands because you get to see what happens in AS sounds a bit pathetic because you get to see it in all of them, but real life situations, you get to actually get an input on what happens and what people think, and I know it's psychology, but it's really interesting, so I really liked it. The things really stick in your mind, but I still remember the studies now. For the subjects that were slightly different, Freud kind of stuck out a little bit because it was just weird, and it was just a bit completely different from everything else.
But it does stick in your brain.
It does, because of that. I mean, that's what was so good about the course. Milgram was my personal favourite, because it was just different, and it just introduced me to psychology, which was really...
I thought Yasna was about to go into a bit of a rap at that point. But those are just some of my students' thoughts on why they enjoy doing AS psychology, and they've gone on to do A2 this year, and two of them actually want to go on and study psychology. But one thing that came through in that is the fact that they realise that each study changes from week to week, and so they have that confidence that that structure is going to remain there, but it's going to be something new, and they like the fact that they can sort of grab hold of something. And just to reiterate what I mean by structure, for those of you who teach OCR, you probably do this already, but I sort of look at the structure as a journey that you take the students on, something that's familiar to them, because they like that security blanket, because they've just left high school, or school, as you call it in this country. So you take a study and you put it in the context of an approach, and then you say, okay, what was the background to that study? Were there any theories? Was that study influenced by other research, by other studies that were carried out? And you expose them to that, and you can make the background exciting for them. And I think the fact that we've now dropped down from 20 to 15 studies means there's more opportunity to really develop that investigation into theories and background research. Then you look at the methods. Who was used? What was the research method involved? And then you give them the details of the study. Was a special apparatus used? How did they carry it out? Where did they carry it out? How long did it take? and then you look at the results and the conclusions from that study. So I look upon this as sort of the lower order thinking if you relate it to Bloom's taxonomy. This is safe for the weaker students. It's also familiar ground for the stronger students, and then over time you get them to start evaluating what were strengths and weaknesses of that study, strengths and weaknesses of the sampling method. Evaluate it. Was it reductionist? Was it ecologically valid? Was it reliable? And then you get them to bring in the debates like nature-nurture. So this journey is continuous and it's familiar to them, and you do this over the 20 studies, 15 I should say. And then you look at the implications. Are there any implications for the theories or the background studies? Can you apply it now to the real world? And I guess if you could you change anything about it? Could you improve it? Could you come up with an alternative? And this to me is stretching the students, and it's placing them in the higher order learning of Bloom's taxonomy, and it's allowing the top students to be stretched. And if the weaker students are struggling early on, then they've still got this familiarity, and by the time they get to the end of the year, they have these skills developed, and then they can go back to the earlier studies and realise, oh, actually, it wasn't that bad early on. And to me, it's something that is a journey that the students feel comfortable with. And then you've got the creativity side of things. There's so many things you can do with teaching these core studies. Role plays, if you can find anybody to do them. Then you can show videos. We've got fantastic video internet resources now, audio interviews on the psychology blogs. You can play games with them to help them understand the key issues. And there's always opportunity to stretch and challenge, and I think the fact that the BPS is endorsing the OCR specification is fantastic. And if you haven't been on the Research Digest blog, then I strongly recommend it, because there's a wealth of fantastic information there that's relevant and up to date. And obviously there's so much more to do. Now, I promised you that I'd give you a bit of an idea about how I introduce Sperry. I'm not saying by any means that this is the only way, but this is just a sort of quirky way that I thought, especially if you're new to considering switching to OCR, this might give you a bit of an idea about how you can introduce a core study. So, Sperry can cause some anxiety for some teachers, I believe. And it's looking at split-brain patients. So obviously I know there's no split-brain patients amongst us, I'm assuming, and I'm not going to do an operation or anything of the like, but I was just wondering if anybody out there will save me, because it's really hard talking to a group of teachers, you know. Anybody willing to volunteer to be a participant in a very brief but easy task? Please. Oh, thank you very much. You saved me. Okay. Alex is okay if I move this. Thank you. If you'd like to take a seat. What's your name?
Gigi.
Gigi. Oh, I like it. Okay, hi. Now, you're going to do a brief experiment. Are you okay to do that? Are you happy to be blindfolded? Okay. All I need you to do is place your hands out in front of you like that, but I'll give you the blindfold first of all. Okay. There you go. You can put yourself on. Okay, this is what I do with my students. I actually sort of say, right, some of you are going to be participants, some of you are going to be experimenters. And then I kick the participants out of the room, and then I explain to the experimenters what I want them to do, tell them about ethics, that they should promise that they're not going to cause any harm to participants while they're blindfolded. Now, Gigi, I'm going to place an object in your left hand. I'd like you to describe it, but please do not use your right hand at all, and don't tell me what it is, just describe it. The microphone is going to go in front of your face shortly.
Okay, it's hard, it's cold, it's got a hole in the top, it's got jagged edges at the bottom. You don't want me to say what it is?
Not yet.
Okay.
Can you say anything else?
I can tell you what it's used for.
Okay.
Opening doors.
Okay, so what do you think it is?
A key.
Okay. Thank you very much. Stay there. Okay, I'm going to put another object, but this time in your right hand. And if you could please describe for me what that is.
It's round, it's small, it's hard. Can I say what I think it is? A Malteser.
Okay, let me take that off you. If you want to take off your blindfold now. It was a marble, but a Malteser is very close. Luckily I didn't get you to eat it. But thank you very much, Gigi. Okay, so I do that with my students, and yes, they often describe the key, and the marble can cause some problems, because I guess I always sometimes give them a dented marble and then they sort of get really confused, but a Malteser is very close, so thank you very much, Gigi, for doing that. And after I do this with them, I then sort of say to the experimenters, so did your participants have any problems with doing that? And they go, no. ask the participants, easy? Could you come up with the correct words to describe it? Yeah, yeah. At that point, they're thinking that I'm somewhat crazy because they're thinking, why are you getting me to do something so straightforward? At which point in time, I play this video for them.
Put the hand out here. I'm going to put something in your hand.
Okay.
Let's try to lift hand first.
35 years on, Joe Boken continues to run experiments with Nicola. By blindfolding her and placing an object in her left hand, he restricts awareness of the object to the right side of her brain.
A what?
It wasn't a screw.
Try the other hand.
Oh, jeez.
Put it out where the camera can see. What is it?
That's a key.
All right.
How come I said a pencil?
Try that.
Nicola cannot describe what is in her left hand.
Is it hard or soft?
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
Is it round or square?
It's, square.
Can you tell if it's round or square?
Square. Feels square to me. Yeah, what is it? Oh, it's a marble.
I then asked them, why on earth did you guys find that easy to do? Or why did Gigi find that easy to do? And this woman can't. They say to me, she's old. And I say, okay, let's try not to be ageist. And then they say, maybe she took drugs when she was younger and had too much of a good time and it's really affected her. Some say she had a car accident, so she's got brain damage. Then you get the sort of smart ass who goes, she's American. They're lucky they don't say she's a New Zealander. But anyway, she doesn't sound like a New Zealander. And so I then say to them, well, actually, you're all wrong. She actually has her corpus callosum cut. And the two hemispheres aren't communicating with each other due to the fact that an operation was performed because she probably had extreme epilepsy. And they go, wow, you can do that and you don't die? And so they really get excited by this thought. And so they've practiced it themselves. They realize that they can do it. Then they realize this woman can't do it. And then you have to get into the nitty-gritty of the study. So you sort of seduce them into a study that can be quite hard for the students to understand. But you've made them excited and inquisitive. And then you throw at them the more technical stuff. So I get them to put it in a diagrammatic format because for some students, the left hand is quite difficult. You always get one or two in the class going, okay, this is left. So I get them to do a diagram like this, which might be familiar to some of you. But I get them to label the hemispheres. I get them to identify the fact that the left hand is controlled by the right hemisphere, right hand, left hemisphere. And then we get down into the visual fields because we need to know about this for the Sperry study. And they sort of go, oh, okay, this is starting to make a bit of sense. And then I say, now think back to that video. What hand was that elderly woman holding the marble in? And they go, ah, she was holding the marble in the right hand when she went, ooh, it's a marble. And they leave the room saying, ooh, it's a marble for the rest of the day. But then I say, now, did you realize that language is actually localized in the left hemisphere? Right hand, left hemisphere, she can say it's a marble quite easily. And then they go, that's fascinating. And they get all excited. And then you go into that sort of journey where you get them to describe the study, evaluate the study, and they go through that process again. But the great thing, I think, is the fact that with any of these studies, the students can take away some personal experience or bring back to the class personal experience. I had a student whose father had a stroke and lost the function down part of his left side of the body. And she said, so does that mean the stroke sort of occurred in the right hemisphere? And it's like, well done. And then she brings into class the scan of his brain to show us the fact that there's sort of this white area that's blurred out because of where the stroke occurred. And it's now making sense. And she's now taking a study and applying it to her own life. And this is what I think is exciting in the great aspect of what the OCR spec offers. This is just almost my last slide, so you'll be able to go and eat shortly. I thought to myself, okay, why are we at Farnborough Sixth Form College staying with teaching OCR? Because we had several meetings where we looked closely at all of the specifications, and at the end of the day, we did decide to stick with the OCR spec. And these, I believe, are the key reasons. We've gone from 20 studies down to 15, so there's more time. You don't have to rush through it, especially at this time of the year when, I don't know about you, but I'm spending like literally 3 hours a study. But now that it's gone down to 15 studies, there's that more time to sort of put it into context and really develop those theories. the new studies offer relevance to the students. They're largely from this country, and they're more recent. There's also the opportunity, I think, with the way the question papers have changed, where the top students are going to be stretched. And we're not leaving the strugglers behind. They're still able to go on that journey, but I think the top students are going to be more equally challenged. The context remains here. They can put it into context. They can relate it to their own lives. They can draw upon their own experiences. And most importantly, they have the opportunity to further their investigation. And it embeds their knowledge. The familiarity gets solidified almost and embedded. And when they move on to A2, they can draw upon their AS knowledge now as well. And the fact that the BPS, like I said earlier, has come on board, I think is a fantastic addition. And overall, I think it just fits together, and I think it fits together nicely, and then it links on to the A2 course, and I think that is what the changes have enabled teachers to sort of find exciting, and why I think we've decided to stay with OCR. And I haven't been paid by OCR, by the way, in case you're thinking that sort of I've got sort of a big wad of cash in my back pocket and they paid me to say all this. This is purely from the heart. I really love teaching psychology, and I do enjoy teaching the OCR specification. So hopefully that gives you an idea. I'm not trying to convert any of you, and most of you are using OCR at the moment anyway. Now, yesterday in Leeds, lots of people stayed behind and asked me where I got that video from with, oh, it's a marble. It was at my college originally when I got there, so I don't know where they got it from. But I have included, and it's not on your printout, my email if you want to take it down. And if you want, it's probably too big to email, but if you want to get in touch with me or get to the website and send me a disc or something, I could probably send it to you. And if you have any other questions about teaching OCR or anything at all, or you want to know about New Zealand and how wonderful it is, then do email me. Okay, thank you very much.